Welcome to Pick Up and Deliver, the podcast where I pick up my audio recorder when I drop my kid off at school and deliver an episode to you while I walk home. I'm Brendan Riley. Well, good morning, listeners. It is Thursday, October 18th, and I am speaking to you as I walk home on this brisk morning, nearly a month after the Protospiel, I guess 3 weeks after Protospiel Chicago. I just released the first of the Protospiel reflection episodes last week, so I thought I would do my second here. Though, as a caveat, I just got sidetracked on things and I didn't actually reflect on it. I didn't record this right away, so if I seem a little fuzzy about some of the details, it's been a couple weeks. I did take copious notes, which I will talk about in a few minutes. So, as a reminder, Protospiel is a game development convention where everybody who comes is there to either playtest games or bring games to be playtested, or in most cases, both. So if you're coming, you can register as a designer and you are allowed to bring games then to have people play, or you can register just as a playtester and go around and try out games. In the last episode, I talked about a couple of the different games that we played, particularly First Against the Wall and Something Wakes in the Forest, and some of the thoughts I had about those games. So that what I do today is talk a little about the third game that we playtested with any vigor, and then see about either that might take the whole time because there's a lot to say about that, or depending how it goes, I might also offer a few reflections on my experience as a playtester as opposed to as the one doing the testing. But so the game that we had that we were testing, first off, we were testing a new name. So this is a game about being, it's an economic game with market manipulation and hand management, resource collection, a little bit of area control. And it's called, well, originally it was called, I don't even remember what the original name was called, the Kingdom of Drag, that's what it's called. So Kingdom of Drag is the location we had where for our first game, Cromlech, took place in this kingdom. And the idea is there's a massive war happening over the throne, and there are dragons that are used as part of the war. And the players in this game, in what was originally called Kingdom of Drag, then we called it Egg Merchants of Drag for a while, and now we're calling it Nest Egg. Players in this game are merchants who have set up businesses selling, harvesting and selling a variety of resources, but most prominently dragon eggs. The dragon eggs are located on the top of the mountain, guarded by the dragons who are laying them, obviously. And the idea of the game is to manipulate four different resources: sheep, wood, workers, and fire gems, and use those to harvest dragon eggs and sell them to these people who are coming into town to buy goods. The game also does allow you to, in various ways, sell your other goods to other players. Not to other players, but to the marketplace in general. There are a number of interesting and unique mechanisms in the game, or things that I haven't seen done in another way. And I'm a little hesitant to describe them here because this game is primarily Rob's. He and I haven't, well, I've worked on it. I've certainly been a sounding board for it more than a co-designer. I would say for First Against the Wall, I consider myself more of a co-designer on that one. We've worked more heavily on it from the beginning. Whereas Nest Egg, I really am just helping with the development. Or Something Wakes, it's my design that Rob's helping with the development. So in that one in particular, I'm not sure how much Rob would want me to say about what we're doing, which is in itself a bad lesson that if the internet has taught me anything about game development, it's that you're far more likely to suffer from, to use Cory Doctorow's phrase, obscurity than piracy. the problem is not that someone will steal your game, it's that no one will want to try it. And so being hesitant to share details about our game seems a little dubious. Nonetheless, I haven't chatted with Rob about how much he wants to share at this particular point, so I'm not going to, except to say two things. We tried a couple new mechanisms at the event, and we were able to play a couple games of it. And as a result, we got some really good feedback about what worked about the new mechanisms, what needed tweaking, and we're getting really close to rules lock on this game, which is fun because it is going to be our first bigger game. Right now in the pipeline, we have this silly party game coming up next, and then we have a game about trains, which has been rules locked for about a year, but the graphic design and development on it has been a bit slow. And then we may do one other small game before we do a bigger game. We've had a change at Rattlebox Games. The artist we've been working with, Marty, has decided to step back. So in the loop, the train game is going to be his last game that he'll work on with us for the foreseeable future. He's always be welcome back, of course, but that means that our economic model changes a bit because we now have to think about how to pay for art. And so that's going to be an interesting challenge as we move forward. But for now, we are proceeding with the games we have in the pipeline that are relatively minimal on art. Needs mostly graphic design stuff, which Rob does decently and I do decently, so between the two of us it's not great, but we'll see how we go. Looking for feedback from you as we make things public. But the long and short of it was that we had some very good design results with Nest Egg, really good commentary, and moving forward on that thinking. I do have a thread about the game in Board Game Geek, or if you're interested in reading the rule set or learning a bit more about it, we're always looking for more playtesters, particularly blind playtesting. Which leads me to the second half of my episode today. I wanted to share a little bit in this second episode about the Protospiel of things I learned about playtesting, mostly from being a playtester more than from doing the playtesting myself, although I did that as well. So I just wanted to share a couple experiences. I'm not going to name check any games here because some of the experiences were positive, some were negative, and I don't want to think through carefully which I'm going to talk about before I do. I just want to kind of lay out my experience, and so I'm not going to mention any of the games that we playtested here. I'm also not clear how public the designers want to be about their games at this point. So if it sounds like I'm vague booking a little bit, that's to save any hurt feelings that might develop. I don't think there will be any hurt feelings, but there it is. All right, so the first thing about playtesting that I really have liked and I've developed is the level of record keeping that people do. I was already kind of going into the playtesting with the record keeping mentality for two reasons. One, we have a good friend that we playtest a lot with at Toggle who keeps copious records of his gameplays, and I've been thinking a while that needs to be something we do. So if we ever decide we want to do sort of statistical pursuits, we have some records to do that with. But also it helps clarify things when we go back and look later, like, wait, what happened in that game? I now have a record. So I have a little book that I'm keeping. I keep it with my game design stuff. And every time we playtest the game, I record when we did it, who was playing, what were the results, significant notes or moments or moves, and that sort of thing. So, but I also noticed a couple of people doing that at Protospiel. In particular, there was one game I played that had a lot of cards, like specific cards that do things, and the playtesters there were recording every move anyone made. So they would literally, each turn, record which move got played, which person did it, what did they do. So at the end, they have a comprehensive record of how did the flow of the game go. And their game is very much about balance, and so having that particular level of record keeping is really good. I'm pursuing the same thing in some of mine, particularly in Egg Merchants. There's a sequence where you choose one of a number of cards, and so looking at which cards people choose time over time again will give us a sense of, are the cards worded the way they need to be, should one of the cards be explained a little better, etc., etc. So I think there's some value there in sort of the copious record keeping. It also, I think, helps the playtesters psychologically feel like your playtest is more valuable, or that you're really valuing their time because you went out of your way to record everything that they did, to really take the time to make note of their playtest. I think it has a psychological effect on the playtest itself. So, robust record keeping. I also did want to name check the Board Game Design Lab podcast had a guy on a couple weeks ago who was talking about playtesting. And while I was a little dubious about some of the things he said, in particular his approach to blind playtesting felt a little short-sighted to me. But he did talk about the idea of what you use playtests for and the way he approaches using playtesting, and I loved all of that. So, as with any kind of design or learning, take what you like and leave the rest for the next person. So that's note keeping. That's a key part of it. Another thing that I think came out of this playtest for me really well is the idea of audience, of thinking about who is the audience for your game and talking to your playtesters about whether they are or are not in the audience for that game before they try it. Now, it's not clear to me. I don't think I had any games where I played it and I went, oh, I'm really not in the audience. Although one of them would be one of the games I played, particularly that one with the heavy record keeping. It had a history theme, and it's just not a game I would ever play, I don't think. And so while I was able to talk about the gameplay itself, one of the questions would you buy this? And I was like, no, because I don't play. I'm not interested in games about politics or whatever. So kind of keeping in mind the audience of your game when you're playtesting. We've had this problem before where we'll have somebody who like never plays heavy games and we're asking them to play a heavy game. Well, okay, there's some value to their disconnect. But there's also a challenge in that if they don't like that kind of game, they aren't the target audience for the kind of game. I remember this used to really bug me about newspaper movie reviewers. In particular, there was a guy when I was in high school and college who wrote for one of the papers in Minneapolis. I think it was the St. Paul Pioneer Press, who hated horror movies. He just didn't like them. But he still wrote reviews of every horror movie that came out. And of course, he said they were all terrible. I'm like, well, why are they sending someone who doesn't like that kind of movie to review it? That's not a good assessment. It's like someone who doesn't like camping reviewing tents. You know, cold and no room service is going to be the answer for all of those reviews. All right, well, so that's lesson two is making sure you think about your audience for your game as you're trying to recruit playtesters. So the third one is actually an emotional experience I had, and I've written in my notes, getting salty. So I've used the term salty before as a way to describe a kind of resentful feeling or a really bad feeling that you have when you're playing a game and it just does not go your way. You feel salty about it. One of the things about games, particularly competitive games, is that you don't want a game that has too many of the wrong kind of feelings. If you're looking for a particular feeling in somebody playing the game, you don't want them to spend a lot of time feeling terrible if you're not. Maybe you want to have a game where you want feeling terrible, getting mad at each other is part of the game. You know, something like the Game of Thrones board game, it's supposed to have betrayal. That is part of what's going on in the game. But most game designers don't want someone to feel bad about what's happening in the game, even if they do build sort of like take that mechanisms into the game or something. And so it was interesting to read or to play in a game that had stuff built in for take that, but wasn't intended to be too mean. And then actually Rob, my design partner, you know, part of playtesting is to really push at the edges of what the game allows. So he just played it as mean as he could and he just attacked me the whole time. Which he did in part because he knew me. He knew how I would react, but also knew that I would take it in the spirit it was delivered, which was at the time I got really salty, but you know, 5 minutes after the game, I was fine. But it's interesting to think about that when you're a playtester, or I don't even know, it's hard to do this without spoiling the playtest, but it might be worth doing as a hidden directive, talking to your playtesters about, I'd like you to try this thing or figure out what you want to try. I guess you could do that yourself too, but so as a playtester, pushing on the boundaries of the game, seeing if you can break it by doing X or Y is a really interesting element as well to think about what are the edge cases that make a scenario good. There was a long discussion on Board Game Geek recently about, do you need to make a rule to keep a player from just passing every turn? My argument was no, because someone passing, unless passing every turn can get you close to winning. But I would think any game where you pass every turn, you're gonna lose for sure. So you don't need a rule for that, because if the person's not interested enough to try to win, then they're not even playing, really. So, but there was an interesting discussion about that. I'll try to find a link for the show notes. So the last comment I had was about blind playtesting. Of course, blind playtesting is where you give someone the rule book and you have them learn to play the game, but you don't tell them how to play. They have to learn from the rule book. And blind playtesting is crucial when you get to the point where your rule is locked, because you need your rules to actually teach the game. People need to be able to pick up the rule book, read it, and play the game. However, I'm gonna offer two big caveats here. One, I really don't like the idea of seeing a blind playtest where people try to learn the, or having a blind playtest where you give players the rule book and say, here, learn the game together. To me, that is not a good playtest, because that's not how I learn. And I suspect most other people, a lot of people don't learn the game that way, where they read the rule book to the group. That seems terrible to me. And so that's not ideal. On the other hand, we did that at Protospiel. And part of why we did it is that the designer wanted to see what were the hiccups in us learning the rule book. Problem is, the rule book wasn't even proofread. So there's a significant problem in creating a rule book to do a blind playtest unless it's really well done, which is why they say blind playtesting should be one of the late stages you do after your rules locked, after you figure out everything about how the game's supposed to work. Then you got to figure out how to teach it to people in ways they can understand, and the blind playtesting is the way to do that. I would say, for those of you out there who do playtesting, asking your blind playtesters to record their sessions seems like the solution here. So you get to hear them trying to teach the game to one another, and if they do sit down and read the rule book together, that works too. But then you're not demanding it of their time at a particular time. The thing that was frustrating for me was, one, that the rule book had a lot of problems in it, but two, that the designer insisted on us learning the game by sitting down and reading the rule book to one another and learning it together. And for me, that was not helpful, because that's never the way I would learn a game. What I would have preferred, and I actually suggested it to him the day before, before we did the playtest the way he wanted, I said, why don't you give me the rule book, or give me a copy of it, or a link to it, and I'll read it tonight, and then we'll schedule tomorrow, I'll teach it to the group, and you can see how well we were able to learn it that way. Rather than this artificial thing where we all sit around and get bored while one person tries to read us the rule book. And he didn't want to do that. He wanted to do the thing where we all sit and listen to the rule book. And he did it because he wanted to hear the parts that didn't work himself. But I feel like basically he was just asking us to waste time. And it was really frustrating. So not my favorite moment of the event, but useful for learning and thinking about how do we understand what you're supposed to do and how you're supposed to learn from the rule book. So, well, that's about it for me. I hope that you've enjoyed this conversation. What are the lessons you've learned from doing playtesting, either being a playtester or running playtests? I'm curious to know. This is an area I certainly can use more help on. Thanks for listening, everybody. I hope that your next walk is as pleasant as mine was. Bye-bye.
Brought to you by Rattlebox Games.